Welcome back to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. You're listening to News Talk WLOB 1310 AM and now 100.5 FM. I don't know if we're building this city on rock and roll, but there's a lot of people putting a lot of effort into building lots of cities and municipalities here in Maine. And with that, we'll introduce our first guest who's doing just that, Steve Levesque. He's the Executive Director of Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Well, good morning. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. We're always interested in economic development in the great state of Maine, so we want to talk about that. But before we go down that road, why don't you give a little bit of your background, kind of how you ended up here in Maine, and what put you in the position to be the executive director of Midcoast Regional, and then we'll talk about the work that's being done up there and go from there.
Sure. I grew up in Maine.
Really?
Yeah, I grew up in Lewis and Auburn. And I left right after high school and joined the Marine Corps and ended up going to college in California and working out there for a number of years. And
how do you decide to go to California? I'm just curious. From, you know, it's not a natural portal from Maine.
That's where I was stationed for a while, and that's where I met my first wife.
Was it Pendleton out there?
It was actually El Toro.
El Toro.
Naval Air, Marine Corps Air Station.
Right by Irvine.
Yes,
I used
exactly.
to live in Irvine.
Did you really?
Yeah, I think there was a helicopter base there at El Toro, and all the time
right.
there'd be helicopters just buzzing around all the time.
Right. Yeah, I was stationed out there.
And that airport, John Wayne Airport in Orange County, that's the civil aviation airport, one of the scariest airports, because we're going to talk about Brunswick, right. which you've done a lot of work with. But Orange County Airport, known as John Wayne, or to locals, the Duke, has the 405 on one side of the runways, and buildings in the Pacific Ocean on the other. And scariest landing I ever had was like 25 years ago where the plane wouldn't come down. We landed literally sideways between two buildings
wow.
because of the Santa Ana winds.
The busy airport.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that memory back,
yeah.
Steve Levesque. So after your service in the Marine Corps, mm-hmm. then what set you on the path in terms of economic development or business development?
Well, I was working, I did get a degree in land use planning from Cal State Fullerton, and a master's degree there, and I was working in the field doing economic and community development and planning work for a lot of small communities throughout California. Eventually, I decided that I'd rather do that back in Maine. So I moved back into Maine in 19. Actually, I commuted for a year. I had my own business, and I spent 2 weeks in Maine, 2 weeks in California for a year, and I got tired of that. So I sold off my interest in California and did it full-time in Maine. Worked for the city of Lewiston for a number of years, the city of Portland for a little while, and then went to work for the state. And I was ended up being commissioner of economic and community development in the King administration.
That was 97 to 2003.
Right.
Since we're talking a lot about economic development and community development, I think those terms are used and they've become kind of amorphous to many people in the public. What's your definition, both in the kind of the practice or the oversight, as the commissioner of the Maine Department of Economic Development? What were the elements that were really key to that role, and how do you define economic development in a meaningful way for either states or local municipalities?
Well, that's a very, very broad question. It's a broad item. It involves a number of different things to help, you know, grow and sustain economies. Everything from dealing with affordable housing and housing and infrastructure to workforce development to environmental sustainability to it's about creating opportunities, and it's about creating a sustainable environment for us to grow our economy. So it's a lot of different elements at the state. You know, I oversaw the Office of Tourism, which is, you know, Maine's largest industry. I oversaw, you know, the innovation, worked with the International Trade Center, the Maine Technology Institute. We had the Community Development Block Grant Program. We provide grants to communities to help them with their infrastructure and housing issues and those types of things, as well as kind of, you know, serve business development, be the ombudsman for the business growth for the state. So it's a lot of different aspects that are involved in, you know, growing our economy.
So from a how much of it though is rooted in policy on either the state level with laws and policy, whether it's tax policy or planning policy, and or on for each municipality, or to some extent, I don't know if county has much direct influence. How much of it has to come from legislative or local municipality policy, and how much of it is private enterprise? Just kind of, is it, you know, is it the push or the pull, the magnet? Is it communicating with outside businesses to bring capital in, or is it trying to change laws to create a better environment?
It's a great question. I think you have to start off with an environment that is supportive of business growth. But at the same time, it's really the private sector who makes the investment, the private sector who creates the job. So I look at it, and I'm different probably from some people, but I look at it as the government is there to act when the private sector acting alone can't make it happen.
Yeah, there's some infrastructure things. The private sector can't create roads and bridges.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's a lot of communities and a lot of states and cities are going for connectivity and Wi-Fi and fiber optics, and many times local businesses just don't have the platform
right
to do that.
Exactly. So I think, you know, that's a strong role of the government. It should be able to ensure that the infrastructure is there to support growth and support your society. At the same time, I think it's unfortunately the nature of the beast that we're in nationally, internationally. We have to compete with other states and other countries. And so the word incentives, business incentives, is always part of the equation that you have to be competitive. Maine is probably on the lower end. We couldn't compete on a dollar-to-dollar basis with a lot of the southern states, for example. They just throw money at businesses to bring them into their region.
But when you say we can't compete, why? Is it the resources? Is it the will of the people? What makes a southern state, which may not have more resources than us, is it opportunity or will or policy that makes some states more aggressive in that area than others?
I think it's a policy decision that the states make, that they're going to invest in attracting businesses. I mean, for example, Texas, they have a local option sales tax in their communities, an extra penny that they use for economic development organizations. And they go out and offer. I mean, when I was commissioner, we'd get letters from companies that would letters from like Amarillo, Texas. So we'll give you $1 million if you move your manufacturing business to Amarillo, Texas.
Wow.
You know, and I think that's fine. I don't think that Maine has to compete on that basis. We don't have to, you know, buy companies, but we do have programs. And I think we're in pretty good shape to make us competitive. And we just showed that with, you know, the recent Wayfair move,
where we
didn't throw a lot of money
but
to help this company.
But you created an environment that was positive for them.
Right.
But backing up to Amarillo, a little-known fact is not only did they have that million-dollar fund, but they would also give every employee of new companies moving there the best hits of George Strait, Amarillo by Morning.
That's right.
Which was the
That's
hit
right.
song,
which...
Yeah.
Which made all the difference.
I mean,
right?
You're a country fan, aren't you, Dave?
Oh,
Amarillo by Morning. It's about the rodeo thing. It's just another tale of heartbreak.
There you go.
I lived in Beaumont, Texas for a while, which is nowhere near Amarillo, but.
But it was in Texas.
But
that's
it,
all
it was. The Golden Triangle of Orange, Port Arthur, and Beaumont.
There you go.
I lived in a double wide trailer in a country music dirt parking lot.
What a life.
Yeah. It was, those were the days. Wow. Long time ago. We have Steve Levesque here. He's the Executive Director of Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority. We're going to talk about, in just a couple minutes, the great work being done. And a lot of the focus is on the former Brunswick Air Base, and there's some business and some new job opportunity up there. But we're talking broadly about economic development here in Maine. You're listening to News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5 FM. How often do we talk about this, Deb? Is this like three times a show for the last 19 years?
Could be.
It could be.
Mm-hmm.
Slight exaggeration. Economic development. I have a hypothesis. And because you have both studied and both you have an academic background in planning and economic development, and you've been the former commissioner in this area, and now you head up a major group in the Mid-Coast. Really want to get your view on what's known as the Steve-O plan, okay? And so even though you're our guest, if you think the Steve-O plan wouldn't work or shouldn't work, just say so. And if by chance your mic goes dead, it's just a technical glitch, okay? I don't want you to think that in any way that we try to shake. My thought from being in Maine, and I grew up in New England, just outside of Maine, a little place called Boston. So obviously, since I've only been here for 16 years, that, you know, according to some of the parochial provincial attitudes in Maine, like if you're not born here, which in my mind is one of the hurdles. I don't know why people do that, you know?
Well, I know you got here as quick as you could.
I tried to get here as quick as I could. And I know that you worked in the Angus King administration, right? Yeah. So you have you worked directly in his cabinet years ago. I ran for U.S. Senate against now Senator Angus King. I have a lot of respect for his work, both as our former governor and now the work he's doing in Washington. But we were at a debate once, and somebody in the audience pointed out that on the four or five candidates on stage, not one of us was born in Maine, including Angus. And the person asked it in a little bit of an aggressive kind of, and it was like, well, you know, I don't know why we should vote for any of you. None of you were born here. And everyone, not everyone, but when you move to Maine, that's not just kind of a quirky, kind of quaint kind of perspective. It's almost like it's baked into the DNA of the state where there's this attitude like, ah, if you're not born here. And when the person asked that, I gave a response that many people think was the core reason I wasn't successful in my U.S. Senate, you know, because... Yeah, because I kept hearing in the camp, well, you're not born here, you're not born here. And I asked the gentleman, I said, you know, what's your name? And he says, oh, my name's Billy. I said, oh, Billy, I'm guessing you were born here, right? And he said, yeah, I was born here. And I said, well, without getting into the anthropology or the biology or whatever, apparently your parents got together in Maine, and the result being the beautiful birth of Billy here in Maine. So that was great, but you had nothing to do with it. You stayed in Maine, which I think is lovely because I love being in Maine. That's why I'm raising my family here. But you didn't make a lot of choices, Billy. And he's like, what's your point? I said, oh, my point is in 2001, I was living in Atlanta, Georgia, looking at business opportunities, decided to come to Maine, decided to bring my family to Maine, decided to buy a house in Maine. A few years later, decided to invest in building a business in Maine. And over the last 14 years, I've created 100 jobs, brought $25 million of outside capital into the state, invested my own money, and I've made a whole series of choices. And I was talking to this guy, Billy, in the audience. At this point, Angus is shaking his head going, tough political position, Steve. You're arguing with it. But I said, why do we celebrate or give this provincial parochial idea of if you're born in Maine, there's something more special? And what I said to young Billy was, hey, I'm not being critical of you being born in Maine. I think that's lovely. But the fact is, why do we, even if it's done passively, why do we create this environment where we tell people who make the choice to come to Maine, invest in Maine, that there's, even jokingly, there's somehow a smaller value attributed to that? And I said, you know, and so then Billy just said, okay, that was my only question, and he sat down. But what do you think? I mean, you must hear it yourself and as a Mainer yourself, but it's like, why do we do that, even if it's sort of a joke? Because underlying, right, it just feels bad.
No, and you're right. I mean, it is a provincial. It is a provincial issue. And I don't know what it is about Maine that and Mainers that have problem with success.
Yeah.
It's compared to, you know, when and it goes to the issue, too, of, you know, we hear a lot of politicians and talk about, well, we don't want to lose our young people. I think it's great for people to go out of the state and get different experiences, and maybe they'll come back.
My oldest daughter, 25, she went away to school, went down to North Carolina, went to nursing school. She's up here now. She just passed all of her clinicals. She'll be an RN in Maine. She did the same thing.
It made me a much richer person,
right?
Living away. And I think so. I'm not opposed. So this whole provincial. You know, Maine versus the rest of the world.
Or if you came here when you were 1 week old, you're not a real Mainer.
Right.
If there was some purpose, or if there was some currency that it was positive, but it hurts us.
It does, and you don't see it in a lot of other places, which is very interesting.
Yeah. And by the way, Sully, were you born in Maine too?
I was.
Have you left yet? Because if not, you should leave.
I went away for college, but it was to Vermont, so it wasn't like it was a huge life-changing experience. But I did technically leave, and I did come back.
That's another show. We should just take over Vermont.
I love it.
Seriously, we should just become Vermain or something like that. Consolidation. By the way, we have Steve Levesque here, Executive Director of Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority. The other question I was going to ask, other than the provincialness, here in Maine, we have 488 municipalities, 35,812 square miles landmass, huge state. You can almost fit the other five New England states inside of Maine. And my economic development, redevelopment thought process is that we're so used to blame, either you're not from Maine or this, or last week our governor was blaming people in the South because, you know, down here below the Big Indian or whatever it is in Freeport. And it creates this sense of we have challenges and problems and we must assign blame to individual people to make them real. But my hypothesis, which I've written about, I wrote a column for the Bangor Daily News a couple of years ago, also known as the column that attracted 784 comments, 99% of them negative, including one from my wife, which was really uncomfortable at home. But my hypothesis was that it's not a definable problem where we can say it was Angus King and his administration, or even to the extent that I'm not a big fan of our current governor and his little sign on the highway saying open for business, because I think that's just meaningless. The big problem I see in Maine is the new economy has changed. We've gone from textiles, we've gone from boat building 250 years ago, we've gone from ocean trade to now a newer economy where those things aren't as viable. And the problem is over the last couple hundred years before trains, planes, fiber optics and all that, we've spread out with a population currently about 1.3 million people. And so when you spread out over 35,000 square miles, you create this inefficiency. And the new economy and what attracts money and capital outside of the state, it's like electricity or water. It's attracted to kind of natural forces. And the natural forces of capital, in my mind, is if you don't have some density, critical mass, and efficiency, you can't have exceptional educational outcome because you can't attract the teachers, you can't attract the resources, you can't provide health care and advanced technology supporting health care, and you can't have enough of a professional talent base for labor because you don't have enough people in clusters. And the big challenge we have is with 488 municipalities across 35,000 square miles, we are inefficient. And so what I wrote about was we have 108 towns that are insolvent. And I only mentioned one in my story. And I don't want to mention again here other than to say I am not welcome to vacation in Milo, Maine anymore. Because I mentioned Milo, which is near Dover Foxcroft, had a history in terms of mill work and timber. But they've gone through some real hard times, and it's almost in the epicenter of Maine, 3 hours to the coast, 3 hours to Vermont, 3 hours to Canada, 3 hours from the south. And my point was our policy now is trying to help every municipality in whether it's federal support programs, state support, regional support. And in the case of the town I'm not mentioning, some people think it's Milo, I said, we would be better off, instead of sending $20 million in subsidy from federal and state for education, health care, energy support, all the other programs, to say to the people of Milo, hey, there's a place, we have 500 acres around Saco, and the state will give you a quarter acre land grant, which is public policy that's done quite a bit in the West, because there isn't enough of an economic engine to create viability across our vast state. So we have to, through policy, help people living in areas where money isn't going to come back. But we never admit it. So all we do is vote more money. And what we're doing in many cases, in my opinion, where we're creating multi-generational poverty and we're not being realistic, because in our political system, the mechanism is elect me, I'm going to help the good people of Milo. My policy is I love the good people of Milo, but right now, for every dollar of taxes they put into the state system, they get 20 back from people who live in other parts of the state. And aside from that being fundamentally unfair, it creates a tax hurdle that makes it more difficult to attract businesses to Maine. So there's a lot of things in that last three-minute kind of diatribe I just went on. But the general thinking, my thought is, we just have to have policy. And we're not helping people by giving them money and kind of just giving them enough to survive with heat and food and in other public support programs, because we have so many areas in Maine that are really hurting. And you can't just say, well, we're all going to have economic development. Microsoft is going to build a plant in every little town. Until we recognize we're going to need clusters and density to have efficiency, we can't compete with other states or other places around the globe. What do you think? Shut your mic off, or do you have a view on density and efficiency with the new economy?
I have a strong view, and I agree. I agree with most of what you're saying. Maine. Maine was founded, and our communities were founded because we were remote, and we had to really be independent to survive.
Yeah, and a 5-mile trade area. You had some horses, I had sheep. Somebody cut down trees, and we traded stuff. And your wife taught the kids, and it was like tiny economy, right?
So our 497 communities right now are very inefficient. I agree with you 100% on that. And we've created through our state tax policy what I call a tax-based chase, because every community, and you lived in California and you lived in Texas, and counties were very strong,
right.
And most of the taxes were collected at the county level. Maine, it's all community level. Every community sets their own tax base. So you end up with this phenomenon, what I call the tax-based chase. So every community is competing with every other community. We so much economic development in Maine is about robbing a company from one community and moving it across the river to the other community.
Right,
and we call that economic growth. And to me, that's not economic growth. So that's a real issue, and it's hard to pick winners and losers. But it really starts with you need to have a strategy.
Do we need to pick winners? Because people say that doesn't capital naturally gravitate to the most efficiency? And I don't think people or elected officials should arbitrarily pick winners and losers. But the reality, whether it's in the 50 states in the U.S. or whether it's around the globe, if you're a company investing $1 million, $1 billion, that money goes where they feel is the most efficient. And so let the marketplace pick winners or losers.
It certainly does, Steve. And you can that can happen, and it does happen in areas that you talked about have more critical mass.
Right.
And if you look at I think there's a place for and if you look at some of the Rust Belt states and some of the areas that have kind of lost from the auto industry and the steel industry, Ohio, for example, they've made some strategic investments in some of those mill towns around the new economy that then allowed the private sector to come in and make investments. And I think some strategic looking at some of our traditional communities, like a Millinocket and some of these other – Lewiston-Auburn is a great example where I grew up. In up until the 70s, over 50% of the jobs in that community were textiles and shoes. My family grew up in those industries. Those are all gone.
Right.
And that community really suffered. But they started working, and I tried to identify what's the next thing that we can do. L.L. Bean came to town, created this customer service operation, and Lewis and Auburn then became a back office, a place for back office operations, and not just your $8 an hour call centers, but there's a lot of medical back office and bank office operations there that occurred because they made that critical decision to recover. And that attracted capital. That attracted the banks and other companies to come. So it's both. I think that you have to take a good hard look at, okay, what is, does Milo really have an opportunity for the future or not? I mean, I think 497 communities in the state of Maine is crazy. Having, 150 school districts is crazy. We ought to maybe have 16 school districts, one for the county, and maybe we consolidate these communities. And we had developed a plan a number of years ago that we would retract to about 77 major communities in the state of Maine to start building the critical mass around policies and regional marketplaces versus every community on their own and fighting with everybody else.
Yeah, but to that point, we have Steve Levesque here. We may have to shrink the size of our legislature because one of the obstacles to doing what you just suggested, which is kind of establish policy to be more efficient, is almost impossible because the way our House and State Senate is set up, each group that you're talking about consolidating has their own parochial self-interest. And those are the obstacles I see, and I saw as a candidate, and I saw as elected to a town council here, that we've gotten so myopic in our own interest and we don't have strength in policy or strength in leadership in government that can say to people, we have a real problem here. And if Maine was in the middle of a natural disaster, to bring up what happened in Japan a few years ago with the nuclear reactor, with the tsunami, and if we went to the people of Maine and said, hey, we have a natural disaster, we have a nuclear power plant that is radioactive, people would go, oh, what do we need to do? My hypothesis is Maine is in the middle of a natural disaster, but it's an economic disaster. And either politicians aren't being honest enough with the public or they're not knowledgeable themselves. Because in a citizen government, we have many people who are dedicated and they're great representatives of the people, but there's some of them that are knuckleheads. And I've been to Augusta and I've testified at meetings, and that we have some elected officials that would not qualify third shift at Dunkin' Donuts because they would mess up the muffins and the crullers. Nobody wants that. But we're a nation of laws, and policy has to be derived from process of laws. But if we don't have the right people doing that, that's where some of the things get logjammed. But we do need to just be smarter. If the people in Milo are 40 miles away from certain health care, because not every community gets an MRI machine or a CAT scan machine, and if you're so many miles away from exceptional educational options, because we're not going to get great teachers to go to every community. And if you're 58 miles from a cluster of jobs, you can't be competitive in Milo. And it's not anyone's fault. It's not Angus's fault. It's not Steve Levesque's fault. It's not even Deb's fault. And I blame her. I mean, I blame you for almost everything.
Yes, you do.
It's a natural function because 200 years ago, we spread out across the state. Part of the problem is we're in the Northeast, so we're one of the first settlements, right? So as people in the U.S. settled going west, things were a little clearer. There were wagon trails, and then there was railways. And so communities became organized in more natural clusters because there was greater learning, there was understanding. But in the Wild West, 150 years ago, if the good people in, Casper, Wyoming, if 100 people live there and you, me, Deb, and Emily there, and we had 100 family members, and all of a sudden the gold mine or the natural resource ran out. You know, we'd have to get together and go, hey, listen, we got to go to Cheyenne. Nobody would say, whoa, whoa, whoa. The people of Cheyenne have decided they're going to pay in perpetuity for you to just to stay here. We would go, what? No, that's not the way it works. If there's not economic viability, if there's not an underlying economy, you can't stay in a place.
Right. And that's what's happening in the Millinocket area.
Right.
I mean, they went from a Class A school to, I think, their combined school of Class C or D now. So, I mean, people make those decisions.
But it happens slow. Right? But it the does. Economy's moving fast, and we're losing out on opportunity. It will happen slow. It's going to happen in the next 60 years. But I want to go to the people of Milo. I think there's 1,200 people, and go, hello, good people of Milo. It would be cheaper as a taxpayer and as a person involved in the community for us to go to folks in Milo and say, nobody's forcing anyone to move. This isn't a Chairman Mao thing. But we can no longer pay in a ratio of 20 to 1 for state and federal support for people to stay in an area. So the support will have to go down to a more natural level. And if you want to stay in Milo, that's great, but you're not getting three bridges. MDOT isn't putting this in. You're not getting this water treatment for 400 people. And you have the right to stay, but we, being everyone else in the community, have the right to say we can't subsidize for perpetuity. And the core issue is we're not helping the people of Milo. We're trapping many people in poverty. And so it would be better to say, hey, here's a quarter acre in a development zone. And by the way, here's a modular home, which you're going to live in, which will be fantastic if you want it. And by the way, you're going to be 6 miles from a great school system. You're going to be 3 miles from a medical center with state-of-the-art technology. And you're going to be within 7 miles of 2,000 jobs.
Right.
Better for you, better for that new community because there's greater density and efficiency. And then we need to kind of reset the state to let economic opportunity naturally grow up and develop. But we don't do that. How say you, Steve Levesque?
Well, you know, I think you hit the nail. It takes leadership and fortitude to do something. I mean, you see it happening naturally over time. For example, a lot of the young people that live in the Milos and the Aroostook counties and other places, when they graduate high school or go to college, they end up usually in the southern part of the state.
Right.
And are living in Portland and every...
Lewiston, Auburn, the Bangor area, and Portland Metro represent 9 out of 10 new jobs in the state, 93% of the capital. Not because somebody did something wrong. It's not North or South or Big Indian or Little Indian. It's economics. It's the future of the state. We need to have greater clarity. We need to kind of accept the fact. But the other thing that bugs me is... Somebody opens up a little donut store up the street from where we are, or somebody opens up a little mini blind company, which, you know, I love mini blinds because they're fabulous, right?
Yeah,
I always say that.
Of course.
And we as a state, or we as the, you know, the media infrastructure, or Main Biz Today, which is a great newspaper, or the Portland Press Herald, they run out with a photographer and a writer, or the forecaster, which I should disclose I write for. So that's obviously my favorite paper.
Obviously.
You love the forecast.
I love it.
But we celebrate and say, oh, Freddie went out and opened up a little donut store, and this is great. And some economic development director in the community puts out a press release saying, hey, we got a new donut store here. And it drives me crazy because nobody loves donuts more than me. But for the state economic development, it doesn't develop anything because it takes the same dollar, the same in the case of a donut, $1.69, it takes that same money and it goes from a Dunkin' Donuts or to a Krispy Kreme or say it moves to another bakery. We need money coming from outside of the state. That's what builds the infrastructure of the state. And playing small ball on this little thing open here or this little thing open there does nothing. Many of those businesses, which is why I'm so excited about the work you're doing, somebody's writing a check from outside of Maine. That money is coming in. That goes to employees here. It goes to infrastructure, support, utilities. That's what we need to focus on. But if you talk to media companies or economic development people, they celebrate the little donut shop as much as anything else. And it's like, hey, that's nice, but that's not going to help Maine in the big picture of what we need to do to grow.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. promoting retail development in communities, to me, unless you have a growing population in that community, is a zero-sum game. Because if you open up a new store or a new donut shop, someone is not shopping at the other donut shop or the other store.
You're just shifting dollars.
That's
and then
right.
somebody lays somebody right. off, and then somebody hires that same person.
That's not economic growth, in my perspective.
But it's mine, too. Right. So if we both say it, and we're both named Steve, that's got to count for something, right?
Well, hopefully it's counting for something where we're working.
I know. It's something. We have Steve Levesque. He is Executive Director of Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority. And you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk, WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5 FM. Well, now let's get to the Brunswick Landing. So talk about the history of the Brunswick Naval Air Station, because I remember over the last decade going up there for air shows, and it's just a massive facility. And I think that's an example where government looked at it as a resource, and then as a naval base, it was also something that required cooperation, coordination with the military. But a group of people, and you've been involved with it for a long time, recognized that here's this asset. How do we replace the economic impact of the naval base? And then how do we do something important? So if you wouldn't mind taking our listeners through the process from when it was first announced that the naval base was being closed, and then let's bring it up to current events and what's going on up there.
Now, I'd be happy to. For those of you who don't know, I mean, the Naval Air Station Brunswick was first formed in 1942. It was a training facility for British and Canadian pilots, fighter pilots.
Deb, you were around then, right?
Of course I was.
You were in high school back then.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
So she remembers
She remembers 1942s very well.
Yeah. So that was a training facility. Actually, George Bush I actually trained there for a while.
Oh, wow.
They were doing torpedo bombing off the coast, Maine.
Really?
And practicing there. So after World War II, it closed down for a short period of time, and then the Cold War popped up. And then from the early 50s up until 2011, it was anti-submarine surveillance warfare facility covering the North Atlantic and Europe and Africa and the Mideast. It was really kind of a strategic facility. That facility was went under the Base Realignment Advisory Commission. It was slated to close. They made that decision back in 2005. And it was closing in 2011, so there's a six-year time frame. And so what had to happen during that process is the federal government, the Department of Defense, sets up what's called a local redevelopment authority, and then you're essentially a planning board for the government to do a reuse master plan for those properties. Once that's done, you have to go through all the environmental clearances, and then when the facility, the base, we call it the base, you get fined $5. It's Brunswick Landing. But when the former base closed, then the Navy could start transferring properties to us. Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority is actually a state-chartered organization like the Loring Development Authority. We're an instrumentality of the state, so we're kind of a quasi-independent agency like the Finance Authority or the State Housing Authority. But so the governor appoints my board, confirmed by the legislature. So once the properties are starting to be transferred, it really gets complex, but we have a couple different types of conveyances. We have public benefit conveyances on the property, which are like the airport property, the 1,000-acre airport that we're the airport authority that came through a public benefit conveyance at no cost. Southern Maine Community College received some properties, some buildings for their campus. Bowdoin College, the town of Brunswick, received some public benefit conveyances on the property. And then about 1,000 acres came to us through what's called an economic development conveyance, which we actually have to pay for. And we were able to work with Senator Snow and Senator Collins to get some law changes at the federal government. Initially, as part of the BRAC law, we would have had to pay the service fair market value right up front for the property based upon an appraisal, which probably been $15 or $20 million. So we had choices that we made. So as part, what we were able to negotiate as a law change that we could negotiate what was called a back-end participation. So we share revenues right now. Every time we sell or lease a property, we share 25% of those proceeds with the Navy. And we've paid the Navy so far about $8 million, and that actually goes into the Navy's environmental cleanup fund. So when the Navy transfers properties to us, it has to be clean from that perspective. But before all that, we had to do this reuse plan, which we involved the community and the citizens, about an 18-month planning process that really kind of laid out the land use configuration and the target sectors and how the land was going to be used.
But part of it was land, but it was also a lot of buildings and infrastructure, right?
Right. 230 buildings, 18 miles of water and sewer lines, electric infrastructure that we all manage, and probably a $2 billion airport facility. Pretty big asset. So we really looked at and identifying what we wanted there. We said, look, this is not going to be your standard small little industrial park in Maine. We really wanted to set a stage, or we wanted to be a center for innovation. I wanted to believe that and focus on attracting new industries to the state of Maine versus just borrowing it from Lewiston. Very early on, we adopted an anti-pirating policy. So if we get a call from a business that's in another community, that business is going to have to assure us that their growth can't be accommodated where they're at. And we'll actually talk to that community.
Because that's different than many economic development plans where they have a pro-pirating policy where people are like, oh, yeah, this company is moving from South Portland. If we can get them in Scarborough, let's go have lunch. And So that's really interesting.
We're not doing that. We focus and we spend an awful lot of time out of state and out of the country. And we have 40 businesses right now on Brunswick Landing that never existed in Maine before.
Wow.
We have Swedish companies. We have companies from Switzerland. We have aircraft companies at Virginia that are all expanded here. So we really focus hard on creating new economic opportunities for the state. One of the things we identified is because, and it's not just Brunswick, and we're trying to capitalize on this, is because of the taxpayer investments in World War II and the Cold War, Maine has these huge aviation assets between Brunswick and Bangor and Lewiston.
Are you talking
and
about
Prescott?
Runway and infrastructure?
Yes.
In most developed communities and states, it would be hard to duplicate that because of the way land use has evolved, right? So you don't want to give it up because, you know, 100 years from now, those assets and those resources would cost 100 times more to develop it, and you'd have to go 100 miles out somewhere beyond, you know, where there's population groups.
Because of the permitting issues, land use issues, and the cost of building those, you know, large runways. So we have these huge assets, and I think we're strategically located in a place where we can capitalize on that for the state of Maine.
For people that may not be familiar, by the way, we have Steve Levesque here. He's the executive director of Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority. They are the entity created by the state to really oversee the development of the former Brunswick Naval Air Base, now positioned and promoted as Brunswick Landing. What does Brunswick Landing look like now in terms of the buildings, the airport, the runways? And I want to talk about some of the businesses that you've worked with and that now are up there, but is it still functioning as an air base? And I know you're trying to attract some more aviation commerce, but how important is the aviation part of, because you've got major runways, and my guess is they're long runways, so they can handle planes that maybe other airports can't. What's the opportunity and what's the existing kind of profile of Brunswick Landing now with buildings and runways and aviation?
Well, 5 years ago this month, the base closed, and we had an airport that was, the Navy left, everything, they just left.
Air traffic control hangars, everything.
The Navy just closed it down, moved all the squadrons to Jacksonville.
So there's not a single military person left there. It's all civil.
There's some reserve facilities for the National Guard and the Marine Corps on the property. So it's all completely civil.
But they're almost a tenant now.
So we're the airport authorities. There were roughly 1.6 million square feet of buildings.
Wow.
240 buildings on the property when we started taking it over in 2011.
And some were in better shape than others. Some were offices. Some was a medical facility.
Well, to our benefit, the Navy spent about $150 million on that facility between 2004 and 2011.
Wow.
So there's some new, brand new hangars, brand new housing areas. There's some new buildings, but there's also some older stuff that we've demolished. So right. we've demolished probably about 40 older buildings that really weren't suitable. But, you know, fast forward to today, we have, and we've served as the master developer. We had a choice. We could go to one master developer and try to attract, you know, a master developer. Our concern was that that person would come here, look at the main economy, buy land, and sit on it
right.
and wait for the economy to turn. We made a decision to be the master developer and then bring in other private developers. And so far, we've had now seven developers on the property, seven different real estate developers. Collectively, they've invested, the developers and the businesses, and we have over 90 different business entities out there now on the property. Collectively, they've invested about $175 million of private sector capital. The private sector has believed the vision, and they're investing in the property, which is significant. We have a number of great projects going on. And so whether it's leases or property sales, we sold over 35 buildings and about 340 acres to the private sector.
And that goes back into the redevelopment authority?
The proceeds come back to us. And then we use that to pay for infrastructure, and you know, we have obviously maintain the water lines, sewer lines, electric infrastructure. That all goes back into the redevelopment effort. We also have to pay the Navy.
Oh, right.
We paid the Navy so far about $8 million as of this year. You know, that money kind of goes into the pool and also generates property taxes, because when the base was there, there were no local property taxes collected. When we lease a property, even if it's to a nonprofit entity, we pay property taxes.
And that goes to Brunswick?
Goes to the communities, both Topsom and Brunswick. We have a small area in Topsom as well. And so we've negotiated a TIF with the town of Brunswick to actually help us reinvest in the infrastructure as well.
Fantastic. Well, what are some of the major employers that you have attracted up there? I know you love all the tenants and all of the owners, right. but relative to scope of jobs, and then talk about what some of the potential employers, but whether yep. they're aviation-based or other kind of labor categories yep. that you think Brunswick Landing yep. really would make sense for.
Well, we have set aside specific target industries that we're trying to attract to the facility. Doesn't mean we won't look at others, but what we've really focused on trying to attract are aerospace industries to complement the, you know, the aerospace complex, information technology that the property has because of what it was the communications facility and of the whole patrol wing has a significant embedded infrastructure and IT infrastructure on the property. So information technology, composites because of the what's going on in the region and in the state of Maine, and composites technology, biotech, and renewable energy. And we have companies in all those sectors there. So just looking at Biomed, for example, we have a company from Sweden, Mölnlycke. Mölnlycke Healthcare, they make wound care dressings.
So I should also say that they're a client of ours.
Great.
In fact, they make dressings for wound victims and for burn victims, and they use a very advanced technology for a type of synthetic gauze that goes over that helps people who are injured. Yeah,
that's great. So we help facilitate through financing. We built them a building, a built-to-suit building that we lease back to them.
Wow.
And that's an 80,000 square foot state of the art facility. We have a company called Tempest Jets, which does a lot of work on Gulfstream jets and Global Express, and they do a lot of special projects. And they're doing a special project for NASA right now. They're refitting Gulfstream 4 that's going to do surveillance to identify coral reef degradation.
Wow.
Across, so they're retrofitting an aircraft to do sensors there.
Special sonar and sensors, right.
Kestrel Aircraft is, you know, despite all the rhetoric, they're still there and they're growing. They've merged with Eclipse Jets, formed One Aviation. They're actually doing a lot of the design and composite work for both the Kestrel, the new Kestrel aircraft that's being developed, but also for the Eclipse Jet as well. We have...
And in the news, Wayfair announced they're developing a big work base here. And will that be right at Brunswick Landing for most of those jobs?
Right at Brunswick Landing. And it's going to be a 500-person business-to-business center. Going to open next month. And that deal, that's in it's in the former Navy Exchange Building.
Which that's fantastic.
Kind of the Walmart of the former base.
And they actually poached our staffing director. So she's busy up there hiring people. Yeah. Right. So please thank them. When you see your Wayfair tenant, go, by the way, you know, the person you have doing all your staffing, they used to work at TideSmart right up until they were poached. But, you know, that happens in business.
It does, and creates another opportunity here.
Yes, it does. The evolution cycle continues.
But that's a kind of a great story, because one of the developer, what we did is we sold. That allowed us to sell that building to Jim Howard with the Priority Group, who is doing the retrofit work and leasing that building now to Wayfair. And we helped by providing some parking lots and other infrastructure to support that business. So that's where we played a role on the government side, if you will, to help, you know, facilitate that. Oxford Networks took the former patrol wing headquarters and turned it into the most secure data center in the Northeast.
I was there last year, and they've got servers and machines with blinking lights, and they have a very high-tech operation up there.
The coolest thing that we have going is what we call Tech Place. Tech Place is a small business technology incubator. We took the former aircraft component rework facility and turned it into a small business incubator with shared machine shops, shared wet labs for biotech companies. And we've been open just a little over a year, and we have 28 small businesses in there.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting for us.
I think we're going to have to do another show with you, Steve, because what you're doing there at Brunswick Landing and the way that this was thoughtfully when the government announced in 2005 that the naval station was closing, I remember there was panic. What does this mean? There's thousands of jobs. It impacts the hospitality industry, housing. What's going to happen in Brunswick and Topsom and that general area? But between then and now, what you've done there and your team and what all the folks at the authority have done in cooperation with the Navy is a great case study of being smart and thoughtful and, I don't want to say aggressive, but very directed and very deliberate. And that's great economic development. And if you could only get that through the other 4,000 economic development municipality people, and you can't wake up here in Maine without going to a Holiday Inn or Ramada Inn, which you do all the time, Deb, right?
Always.
And go to the lobby and go, we have an economic development meeting at 8 o'clock, and a bunch of people sit around with Post-it notes going, I hear biotech is big right here. And everyone's spinning their wheels. The stuff that you guys have done is thoughtful. It's public planning. It's private public cooperation. It's the military being involved. But I applaud everything going on up at Brunswick Landing. I think what you've done up there is phenomenal, and from the sounds of it, there's nothing but, you know, more positive growth happening.
Well, thanks. But, you know, like you said, it takes a lot of different entities and people to pull it together, and it wouldn't happen if the private sector didn't step up.
Right.
And believe in the plan and believe in the vision and start making investments.
And you're creating more density in the whole Brunswick area and Topsom and its proximity to Portland and other areas. And for people interested in more information, the website is mrra.us.
That's correct.
And want to wish you and everyone up at the Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority more luck in developing Brunswick Landing and great success.
Well, thanks for having me on, and great economic development discussion.
I know.
I enjoy that.
We will do this again, because especially since you seem to agree with almost everything I said, so that puts you on our favorite guest list automatically. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5 FM. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.